sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. There are now 2,349 architects and engineers demanding a new investigation into the events of 9/11. And in addition to the 2,349 architects and engineers that have signed this petition demanding a new investigation, there are currently 20,204 regular folks who are not architects and engineers who have also signed the petition. So if you aren't one of those, you might want to go to that website and do it right now, ae911truth.org. And their founder, architect Richard Gage, is currently on a multi-country tour of Europe, including Iceland. As I reported on a previous show, YouTube, which has been owned by Google since 2007, took down a video posted by Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth that starred Ed Asner, 9/11 victims' family members, scientists, and first responders, all challenging the official account of 9/11 and all demanding a real investigation. It had over 1 million views before it was taken down. And the video is called Solving the Mystery of World Trade Center 7 with Ed Asner. For some reason, somebody doesn't want you to see or hear or know what's in this video. The Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth complained to YouTube when this happened, and my understanding is that it was put back up on YouTube. But the fact that it was taken down, censored, if you will, makes me want to watch it and share it with all of you. What is it that they don't want us to see, hear, know? So you can listen to the video and see what you think. So here it is, Solving the Mystery of World Trade Center Building 7 with Ed Asner.
Throughout the ages, architects and engineers have designed and built the great structures that have made our world and withstood the test of time. Hi, I'm Ed Asner. Welcome to Architects and Engineers. Let's look now at modern steel frame buildings. This is the Empire State Building, a marvel of modern architecture. It was built to last. Architects and engineers of today use computers to design and engineer buildings that will endure the forces of nature, such as earthquakes, fires, and hurricanes. This modern skyscraper was also built to last. We've seen buildings completely destroyed like this before, but only when done intentionally. Danny Jowenko is the expert on this in Europe. What did he say?
This is controlled demolition.
Zeker weten.
Zeker weten. Er is nagesprongen. Dit is in opdracht gebeurd. Het heeft een team gedaan van experts.
Let's compare. Explosives are used to demolish buildings like this in just seconds. Okay, so it's a controlled demolition. What's the problem with that? Well, it happened on the afternoon of 9/11 at the World Trade Center. Let's just think about this. Controlled demolitions cannot be engineered and rigged in a day. It takes months. And therefore, this event must have been planned in advance.
You hear that?
Keep your eye on that building. It'll be coming down.
The building is about to blow up. Move it back.
We are walking back. There's a building about to blow up.
Did they actually use the word brought down, and who was it that was telling you this?
In the fire department, and they did use the word, we're going to have to bring it down.
And these people heard explosions.
We heard this sound that sounded like a clap of thunder.
looked like there was a shockwave ripping through the building, and the windows all busted out. About a second later, the bottom floor caved out. The building followed after that.
He takes his hand off, and you hear 3, 2, 1, and it was boom, 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 boom.
And these reporters recognized it as a controlled demolition.
And I turned in time to see what looked like a skyscraper implosion. It looked like it had been done by a demolition crew. The whole thing just collapsing down on itself.
For the third time today, it's reminiscent of those pictures we've all seen too much on television before, when a building was deliberately destroyed by well-placed dynamite to knock it down.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion. It just pancaked.
So what's the problem if this was a planned demolition? Well, we are told by government agencies that this building came down as a result of normal office fires. The National Institute of Standards and Technology produced their final report in 2008.
World Trade Center 7 collapsed because of fires fueled by office furnishings. It did not collapse from explosives or from fuel oil fires.
Well, what do you think brought down the building?
And what caught my eye is more than 1,300 architects and engineers examine the evidence about Building 7's collapse and disagree with the official report issued by the National Institute of Standards and Technology. I certainly am much more open-minded about it than I was, and it is because of the involvement of the 9/11 families and all these engineers and architects.
You are about to hear from architect of 23 years, Richard Gage, AIA, member of the American Institute of Architects and founder of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Now there are more than 1,500 architects and engineers who say that it could not have been brought down by office fires. They are backed by 9/11 family members. We're calling for an independent, unbiased investigation.
I'm Richard Gage. Fires have never before caused the collapse of any skyscraper, even though there are numerous examples of much hotter, larger, and longer-lasting fires in these buildings. And in the case of Building 7, the fire that NIST said started the collapse had actually burned out over an hour before. It could not have caused the collapse, as NIST claims. Yet this 47-story, modern steel-frame skyscraper, which was not hit by an airplane, collapses mostly into its own footprint like a house of cards, as fast as a bowling ball falling off the side of the building, in just under 7 seconds. Listen to the experts.
Building number 7 descended in free fall for the first 100 feet, which means that there was absolutely no resistance to the descent whatsoever.
NIST has admitted it went into free fall for 8 stories. And going from motionless to free fall instantly, that's a bothersome part of the puzzle because NIST never explained it.
We've got a building that came down in its own footprint, so all of the columns really needed to be severed at the same time in order for that structure to fall the way that we saw.
The symmetry is the smoking gun.
The whole building completely comes down in one continuous motion. There couldn't have been any structural resistance.
According to NIST, the failure occurred at column 79 on level 12. They're talking about a single columnar collapse or failure that resulted in a total collapse of the building.
It is possible that you could have a local failure as a result of a connection failing. But the likelihood of that failure dragging the entire building in such a fashion that all the columns would fail at the same time is an impossibility.
Impossibility?
Yes.
What I saw, it was a classic implosion. The center of the core, the penthouse area, starts to move first, and then the building follows along with it.
I'd like to know why NIST excluded the document from FEMA in Appendix C that documented the evidence of melting steel. Why is this forensic evidence not being included in the report?
In an office fire, you cannot generate enough heat to melt steel. and yet we have evidence of molten iron. R.J. Lee Company, USGS, and Dr. Stephen Jones's work, all three separately found these microspheres.
In the dust, we found what we characterize as unreacted thermitic material in the shape of some very tiny red-gray chips, which have different properties, and in the reaction they produce molten iron, which is the prime indication of a thermitic reaction. And such a reaction can be used to destroy steel structures. What we have found is a modern version of thermite, which we call nanothermite.
There were these iron microspheres present in all of the dust samples that needed to have been formed in extremely high temperatures.
I've independently seen thermitic activity within two separate independent samples of World Trade Center dust. My contention, based on finding thermite residue in the dust, is that it happened before. It didn't happen after in the fires that ensued in the rubble pile afterwards. All the characteristics of the microspheres tell me that thermite was involved in melting those steel beams.
So thermite, if it was present at the World Trade Center and created this molten metal that so many witnesses and photographic evidence shows, would also explain the fact that the fires could not be put out at Ground Zero.
The only thing that is consistent with all of the evidence that we have that could cause such a thing is the use of thermite to cut through the steel.
You'd get down below and you'd see molten steel. Oh. Molten steel running down the channel rails. Like you're in a foundry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like lava.
Like
lava
from a volcano.
Well, the manual gets into thermite, and if it says if you have melted steel or concrete, which we had on 9/11, we should test for it.
It's this fused element of steel, molten steel and concrete and all of these things all fused by the heat into one single element.
We're asking for an investigation that follows national standards. There's no excuse to not test for this. If terrorists use explosives in 93, why didn't we test for them? If all these witnesses heard explosions, why aren't we testing for them?
NIST concedes that they found no evidence for explosives. So then we asked them, well, did you look? And they said, no, we did not look for explosives or residues of explosives.
So the preconceived notion of NIST is that there's no evidence for explosives, and so there's no point in looking. That is the most unscientific thing that you can possibly think of, not to look because you don't expect to find evidence, and in fact the evidence is overwhelming. They state these conclusions for which there's virtually no evidence, and then they ignore conclusions that can be drawn from the evidence.
The Freedom of Information Act request to NIST was denied with the claim that releasing this data might jeopardize public safety. How could it possibly jeopardize public safety?
The destruction of evidence was a criminal act in itself. It was already being carted away and destroyed when the FEMA investigators got there about a month after September 11th.
You can't do science when you are deprived of the evidence and when your hypothesis is the least valid instead of the most likely. When the most likely hypothesis in the case of Building 7 wasn't even mentioned. This is not science.
The scientific forensic evidence ignored by NIST, but carefully reviewed by teams of technical professionals, corroborates the hypothesis of explosive controlled demolition. We've traveled to 21 foreign countries and 32 American cities bringing this evidence to the attention of the public. And we're backed by 9/11 family members and other concerned citizens who are calling for an independent, unbiased investigation.
I'm a family member trying to find out the answers to the murder of 3,000 plus people. The bottom line is that it needs to be investigated properly.
Please look at architects and engineers, people all around the world, scientists all around the world, are questioning this. And there's some deep, deep explaining to do.
It took some kind of consciousness raising on my part before I was willing to look at the possibilities. And really, you need to go where the evidence leads.
As an engineer, and I have 3 degrees in engineering, I signed that petition for architects and engineers for 9/11 truth some time ago because the American people absolutely need the truth of 9/11.
Look at the evidence. In fact, I'll say this very categorically. Any reasonable person who looks at the evidence that's been brought forward has got to come away with the feeling that something has to be done, a real investigation has to be put forward.
We will never heal. This country will never, ever, ever forget that day. We have to demand a new investigation. I want justice here.
The country owns this. We were all victims. You all should want answers. It's not just ours, not just mine. We all lost something that day.
It's distressing for everyone to come to terms with this evidence, but we must pursue the truth wherever it leads. Look at the evidence and decide for yourself.
And again, that was the YouTube video, Solving the Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7 with Ed Asner, that was recently removed from YouTube and then reposted after the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth complained. Some of the media voices you heard in the video were Geraldo Rivera and Dan Rather. And some of the scientists were Lynn Margulis, the late wife of Carl Sagan, the late NASA scientist Bob Bowman, Tony Zambodi, who spoke here at our conference on World Trade Center 7 a few years ago, and high school physics teacher David Chandler, and family member Bob McElvain, who lost his son in the towers. And of course, the video of this is much more powerful than the audio, so I encourage you to check it out at YouTube. And again, it's Solving the Mysterious Collapse of World Trade Center 7 with Ed Asner. You know, occasionally some family and friends will say to me, why are you still talking about 9/11? That was almost 14 years ago. And my answer is that as long as 9/11 is being used to justify the global war on terror and used to take away our civil liberties under the Patriot Act, and as long as we're under continuity of government, or COG, which we have been since 9/11, and as long as the bogus global war on terror is used to destroy country after country in the Middle East and kill millions of innocent people, and as long as the government and media cover it up, I'm going to talk about it. As many of you know, there are mountains of evidence that 9/11 was a false flag event, planned and orchestrated by the neocons, with some major and minor roles played by other countries and their intelligence agencies, and blamed on Al-Qaeda and the Muslims. There's also ample evidence that most, if not all, of the alleged terrorist attacks in the U.S. since 9/11 have serious FBI involvement in setting people up and then catching them. And there's ample evidence that Al-Qaeda and ISIS and other terrorist groups were created by the CIA with the help of their friends in the Middle East and elsewhere. It's a brilliant plan if you want to destabilize a country. And most people believe the propaganda pumped out by the corporate media and a lot of the alternative media, so they get away with it. To illustrate this point, here's a short clip from the Max Keiser Report, where Max is interviewing Robert Steele, a former U.S. Marine, CIA officer, co-creator of the Marine Corps Intelligence Service, and author of the Open Source Everything Manifesto, Transparency, Truth, and Trust. And here it is.
There are several terror events in Europe by Europeans recently. Now, each one of the bad guys was already known to security services. Good example being here in the UK, they had somebody who was on MI5's radar. He went off to join ISIS, and he became the jihadi John. So your thoughts, is this because we have too much data or too many people on the terror watch list? There's not enough real intelligence. What's going on here?
Well, Max, this may be too much for you guys, but let me give you the bottom line as I see it. Most terrorists are false flag terrorists or are created by our own security services. Now, I have no direct access in England, but I will tell you that here in the United States, every single terrorist incident we have had has been a false flag or has been an informant pushed on by the FBI. In fact, we now have citizens taking out restraining orders against FBI informants that are trying to incite terrorism. We've become a lunatic asylum. As far as Jihadi John, the best guess that I can give you is that this is funded by Saudi Arabia, trained by CIA. This destruction of ancient artifacts and so on, that's a covert action influence operation. That's not something they would normally do. This is, in one word, largely theater.
The global 9/11 truth movement has grown so large and has reached so many people that perhaps the perpetrators are getting nervous. The recent hype made about declassifying the 28 redacted pages of the 2002 Joint Congressional Inquiry into 9/11 is part of a plan, I believe, to divert the attention to the Saudis and away from others more deeply involved. This is what a recent article posted on the website globalresearch.ca called Saudi Arabia's Alleged Involvement in the 9/11 Attacks, a Red Herring Propaganda Ploy, has to say about it. The 9/11 narrative in the mainstream media has taken on a new slant. The FBI is now accused of whitewashing Saudi involvement in the 9/11 attacks. The alleged Saudi involvement in supporting Osama bin Laden, not to mention the classified 28 pages of the 9/11 Joint Congressional Inquiry pertaining to the insidious role of Saudi Arabia in supporting the hijackers, is part of a propaganda ploy. When the Joint Congressional Inquiry into 9/11 was released in December 2002, it was met with considerable skepticism. That skepticism grew for a period of time, but then was reduced to speculation about what was contained in the 28 pages that had been redacted by the Bush White House. Various U.S. government leaders have since suggested that the missing 28 pages point to Saudi Arabia's complicity in the 9/11 crimes. However, such musings fail to discuss other important issues, like the links between the Saudi regime and the Western deep state. Discussion of the missing 28 pages also omits mention of the highly suspicious nature of the inquiry's investigation and its leaders. The key figure behind this new wave of propaganda is former Senator Bob Graham, who led the joint inquiry of the Senate and the House Intelligence Committees together with Representative Porter Goss, a career CIA official who was subsequently appointed Director of National Intelligence by the Bush administration. Graham coordinated the drafting and editing of the report, including the 28 classified pages on Saudi Arabia. While Graham is now heralded by the mainstream media as a 9/11 truther, the evidence suggests that immediately in the wake of 9/11, he was involved, together with Porter Goss, in a cover-up on behalf of Bush Cheney. According to Kevin Ryan, in the months following 9/11, both Goss and Graham rejected calls for an investigation. Both the joint inquiry led by Graham and the 9/11 Commission were part of a big lie. And now Bob Graham and 9/11 Commission Chairman Thomas Keene are accusing the FBI of camouflage and the Saudis of collusion in the 9/11 attacks, while failing to acknowledge cover-up and complicity at the highest levels of the U.S. government. And because Bob Graham accuses the FBI and the federal government, the 9/11 truth movement applauds without realizing that these accusations directed against the FBI are framed with a view to sustaining the mainstream 9/11 narrative. What is at stake is a desperate ploy to uphold the legend that Muslims were behind 9/11 and that Saudi Arabia was behind the terrorists, giving them money, with the FBI involved in a cover-up, George W. Bush protecting his Saudi cronies because the Bushes and the Bin Ladens were intimate friends. Former Senator Graham smells a rat, and that rat is the FBI and complicit government agencies. But who is the rat? The FBI or Senator Bob Graham, who is visibly involved in a cover-up on behalf of U.S. intelligence? He accuses U.S. government agencies of negligence, which serves to arouse protest against the FBI by many 9/11 truthers. Graham's staged accusations thereby serve to distract the American public's attention from the real evidence, amply documented that the World Trade Center towers were brought down through controlled demolition and that Islamic terrorists were not behind the 9/11 attacks. The issue of Saudi financial support of Al-Qaeda is not only known and documented since the heyday of the Soviet-Afghan War, it is irrelevant to establishing who was behind the terror attacks. Moreover, the contents of the 28 classified pages are known. Calling for the official release and publication of the 28 classified pages in the joint inquiry report pertaining to Saudi Arabia is an obvious red herring. The objective is to confuse matters, create divisions within the 9/11 truth movement, and ultimately dispel the fact that the 9/11 attacks were a carefully organized false flag event, which has been used to declare war on Afghanistan as well as usher in sweeping anti-terrorist legislation. Both the congressional inquiry as well as the 9/11 Commission report are flawed. Their objective was to sustain the official narrative that America was under attack on September 11, 2001, and Graham's role in liaison with the CIA is damage control with a view to protecting those who were behind the demolition of the World Trade Center towers as well as sustaining the Al-Qaeda legend, which constitutes the cornerstone of U.S. military doctrine under the so-called Global War on Terrorism. Without 9/11 and the Global War on Terrorism, the warmongers in high office would not have a leg to stand on. In turn, 9/11 truth is an encroachment which undermines war propaganda and the U.S.-led campaign of Islamophobia, which is sweeping the Western world. This has served to precipitate segments of the 9/11 truth movement into an erroneous and contradictory discourse. On the part of the U.S. government and its intelligence apparatus, the objective is ultimately to build a narrative which will weaken the 9/11 truth movement. The purpose of the new propaganda ploy is ultimately to sustain the legend that Osama bin Laden was behind the attacks and that Saudi Arabia relentlessly supported Al-Qaeda, namely that Saudi Arabia acted as a state sponsor of terrorism. There is, however, an obvious hiccup in this reasoning. If the Saudis were indeed the state sponsors of 9/11, why on earth did the U.S. and the Atlantic Alliance, under the doctrine of collective security, choose to wage a just war of retribution against Afghanistan? Did they get their countries mixed up? So, my 9/11 Truth colleagues, don't be fooled by the 28 redacted pages ploy. I did a show 3 or 4 months ago on Bob Graham and Porter Goss and their backgrounds and inconsistencies in relation to this new push for the 28 redacted pages. You can hear that show by going to radioforall.net. And once on the site, search under Cheryl with a C and the show should pop up. And now just a reminder, Andrew Craig, author of the book Presidential Puppetry, will be speaking at the University of Hartford on Thursday, April 23rd at 7 p.m. in the Auerbach Auditorium in Hillier Hall. He'll also be signing books, and this is one not to miss, so please join us. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.
Power to the people!